This is WBUR's All Things Considered. I'm Lisa Mullins.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Life at 3!
A towering Christmas tree from Canada stands on Boston Common today. It was lit last night with great fanfare, including fireworks, Santa, and song. The Boston tradition always brings good cheer, and that's in stark relief to the catastrophic accident 400 miles away that's at the root of the tree ceremony. 100 years ago this month, in Halifax, Nova Scotia, two ships collided in the harbor. That sparked the largest man-made explosion until the atomic bomb. 2,000 people were killed, 9,000 were wounded. Author John Bacon has tracked that disaster a century ago in Halifax, all the way to the annual celebratory tree lighting in Boston. In 1917, city and state leaders gathered at Faneuil Hall in Boston within an hour of getting word of the blast. They wanted to plan relief. The first train of medical crews and supplies went out that night.
They sent two trains, two ships, 100 doctors, 300 nurses, $1 million worth of supplies, cars with gas and chauffeurs, enough to run several temporary hospitals. And this saved countless lives.
And in appreciation, Halifax sends the Christmas tree to Boston every year. John Bacon tells the story in his book, The Great Halifax Explosion. To set the scene, World War I had reached its crescendo overseas. The Allies were sending over high explosives. The French freighter called Mont Blanc had stopped in New York. There it was carefully packed with dynamite, TNT, and a poisonous chemical to put in shells aimed at the Germans.
And yet, at the last second, after taking all this care with this very dangerous stuff, the French government asked for 400 barrels of benzol fuel, which is airplane fuel. They load that very carelessly on top of the Mont Blanc and lash it pretty loosely. So that is your fuse for this great bomb.
At this point, what happens early on December 6th, 1917?
Mont Blanc is dying to get into the harbor, and another ship called the Emo, which is from Norway, a relief ship that's empty at this point, and it's going the opposite direction to New York to fill up with relief supplies to help those who've been bombed. It's trying to get out of the harbor. Mont Blanc knows it's carrying these explosives, and Emo has no idea. Only 5 people in the harbor know what Mont Blanc is carrying for security reasons. So Emo is going way too fast, and it's basically equivalent in the Narrows to a 2-lane road in the country.
The Narrows of the harbor.
The Narrows of the harbor. It's only 1,000 feet across, which is very tight by nautical standards, for about a mile. The Emo, in a hurry, keeps on passing ships to the left. You can keep doing that, but after a while, sooner or later, you're going to see another ship coming your way on the other lane.
The other ship is the Mont Blanc.
That's the bad news.
And it's in the correct position.
And it's hugging the shore. It's being paranoid, actually. It's staying off to the right as best it can, but the Emo is not backing off. And the Mont Blanc captain cannot believe what the Emo captain is doing. So finally, at the last second, he loses his nerve and he cuts to the left. Emo, at the same split second, loses its nerve and also backs up, which swings the bow off to the right, right into Mont Blanc at 8:46 in the morning.
It's not a huge collision, but what happens is it has an enormous effect. What happened from that point?
You're right. It's not a big collision by harbor standards, and during World War I, it happened all the time. In this case, however, it knocks over that loosely packed benzol fuel in the bow of Mont Blanc. It lights. And the guys on board know, of course, you know what's on it. So they get in 2 rowboats, 20 men each, and go the opposite direction towards Dartmouth and run into the woods as far as they can because they know what's on that ship. Now you've got a ghost ship. This ghost ship slides right perfectly into Pier 6 at the base of Halifax. And the timing is cruel. It's 8:46 in the morning. School kids, guys going to offices and factories, they all stop and watch this thing burn. And they go ooh and ah, having no idea what's going to happen next.
What did?
The temperature of the hold of Mont Blanc skyrockets to 9,000 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 6 times hotter than molten lava. At the same time, of course, it expands in all directions at 3,400 miles per hour. That's 4 times the speed of sound. J. Robert Oppenheimer, the architect of the A-bomb, he calculated correctly that the Mont Blanc explosion was 1/3 to 1/5 as powerful as the bomb we dropped on Hiroshima. The ship itself basically disintegrates and becomes a 2-mile-high mushroom cloud. And in that split second, you've got 25,000 homeless. Half the city is gone.
You write that there was black rain and a tsunami?
Yes. The explosion happens, then the gas bubble shoots out in all directions the way it does for an atomic bomb. Next comes a 35-foot tsunami because the pressure also went down. You could see the seafloor briefly, and that creates a 35-foot tidal wave that hits the shore of Halifax. If you survive the first two things, this would pull you back into the harbor and drown you.
Given that kind of devastation, how was Little Boston, as significant as it was at the time, how were the people here able to make any kind of a difference?
Huge difference. And one reason was because your governor and your Boston mayor at the time had planned for World War I in a way that no other city in North America did. They knew that something might happen in Boston Harbor. If it did, they had to have people lined up, doctors, nurses, materials, supplies. So they sent all these materials, all these people, all these trained professionals, including welders and glazers, to put window panes back in the windows. And when they packed the ships in Boston Harbor, they announced this through the newspapers, and there was a throng that came down to drop off things themselves. A high society lady pulls off her fur coat and puts it on top of the pile, and they cheer the ship as it goes to Halifax. That generosity, by the way, was never, ever forgotten. One of my quotes from Joseph Bars, one of my heroes, he says, "We have always been a trifle contemptuous of the United States on account of their prolonged delay in entering the war, but never again. They can have anything I've got."
And the help from Boston lasted well beyond the first month.
Months, years. They set up department stores with everything you could ever want, everything you lost in the explosion, they had in these warehouses. Baby buggies, beds, clothing, you name it, and it's all for free.
And there are kind of tentacles to what happened, including here in Boston. Dr. William Ladd was heading the Red Cross contingent. That brought lasting change that we see today to the Red Cross and also to the care of children.
Exactly right. Red Cross, to that point, had been a somewhat unfocused group, if you will. After that, they decide to focus on disaster relief. Dr. William Ladd comes back to Boston because in his 1 month up there with his staff, he realizes then that pediatric surgery is fundamentally different from adult surgery, especially, of course, burn victims whose bodies are still growing. So he's got a little shop, if you will, up in Halifax, comes down to Boston. They give him 3 beds to start out with. It ends up being a gigantic wing of the hospital. You ask any pediatric surgeon to this day who the father of pediatric surgery is, and they'll tell you it's Dr. William Ladd, and it starts in Halifax.
And the hospital?
And the hospital is Boston Children's Hospital.
Do people now in Canada, or at least in Halifax, know of this story?
They know the story very well. And if you're from Boston, go on up there and say you're from Boston. I will bet you right now you ain't paying for your pint. They still love you folks, and they should.
John Bacon is author of The Great Halifax Explosion. You can see images of the devastation on our website, WBUR.org. Bacon's going to be speaking tonight at Brookline Booksmith. By the way, he says that it costs Halifax taxpayers $180,000 each year to send the Christmas tree to Boston. Bacon says they're happy to contribute. As one Nova Scotian said, "Why do we have to stop saying thank you?"